everyone.
Hey, everyone.
Welcome to the Squad Pod. Here's your host, my dad, Troy Dog.
All right, people, welcome to another episode of the Squad Pod. I'm your host, Troy Dog, the CEO and editor-in-chief of Vermotor.com. Thanks for listening. It's World Mini Week. So while the crew's at the track slaving away, I'm here just chilling, posting every news I can hear. And I'm doing my part with this podcast. I got Pulpamex's Steve Mathis, who will be at the event. He's going to be riding practice today, actually. He's my athlete for the weekend. And I have former 250 Supercross main event winner, former Rockstar Energy Husqvarna rider, former Geico Honda rider, Blake Wharton, joining me as well. He had a magical week in 2007 at the World Mini. Some would say one of the best amateur performances of all time. He won 5 championships. He raced 7 classes. He raced a Super Mini. He raced a 250. He raced a 125. And he raced a 450. And that was all while he was on the amateur KTM team. We'll talk about that in his interview, but man, that was a cool time for amateur racing. It was, you raced every weekend. Blake alludes that he did that normally every weekend. He would go to local tracks and race. So, he actually did it at an amateur national and he made history. At the time, it wasn't really that significant. I remember hearing about it. I was a teenager at the time. I was in the magazines and things like that, but now it's more of like a legend, and there's jokes that he raced a 50, everything from a 50 to 65 to an 80 to 450 to pro sport. He raced everything that day, and he won 800 championships, but we get to the bottom of it, and we'll get into that right after Steve. But I had to get Steve on. We haven't talked in a while. I had some beef. We buried some beef here. We got the Vermoto crew coming into a studio after the World Mini, and I wasn't invited, so we'll get into that. But yeah, so sit tight and enjoy these two interviews, World Mini. Keep it locked in all week to Vermoto.com for daily coverage, and check out ShopVerb.com to check out on some merch, get some those points racked up for the Dream Stakes, get entered to win. And up first, we have Mr. Pulpamex himself. All right. On the line, joining me on the Vermoto Podcast Network, is a man who will be at the World Mini Grand Prix this weekend. He's the man behind Pulpamex Empire. It's my former boss, Steve Mathis. What's up, four-time?
What's happening? How are you, Troy boy?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm very honored you're joining me on my own podcast for once. You don't do many outside your own, so I feel special.
Yeah, you know what? I don't get asked a whole lot, though. You're right, I don't do many, but it's not like I get asked and I say no. I just don't get asked. I guess people are probably tired of hearing my voice, you know?
Maybe. So, I'm not. Yeah. I'm not. I'm good. Yeah, no doubt. So that's cool. We somehow, you're an AM specialist now because of us, you know? Mm-hmm. You're going to the Vermoto World Mini Grand Prix. Because of us, I feel like.
100%. I was strong-arming into this. I don't want to do this.
Hmm.
I'm not going to enjoy this. But, yes, Wes, Chase, Brent, all of you Verb guys wrangled me into this. And I'm not happy about it. But I'm going. And I'm going to, you know, I'm going to a race. I went to a race last weekend. I'm going to a race this weekend. I'm sure Tomac, Sexton, Jet Lawrence, they'll all be there because I've been seeing them every weekend. So what's different about this weekend?
I mean, yeah, it's yeah, your racers race and you cover races, so it kind of goes the same way.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's how I feel. Like, so I'm looking forward to seeing Tomac and Jet and Sexton and all the racers that I see every weekend battle it out on a great track. Can't wait. Verb Moto, catch the fever.
Catch the fever. So I really think it's Slaw Dog's fault for you not enjoying it, but for everyone else, you're going to enjoy it. I think that this is all Slaw's fault on the part that is negative.
Yeah, Slaw sucks. Yes. That's the bottom line. That's something that everyone can agree on.
Yeah.
And we can move forward on that sort of notion, you know?
He doesn't even go to races either, so you're not going to see him.
No, I doubt it. Now, I love Mesquite. I've been riding my dirt bike a lot lately, mostly at Mesquite. Gary and everybody there are great people, and I appreciate them letting me ride there. So, you know, Mesquite's my house. Mesquite's my track. I look forward to it.
With that being said, I've heard that you're just going to practice and not race?
Yeah, I don't race, Troy. I raced the World Events for a long time, and then I took a year off, and I think I'm done racing. I don't know. This is a World Mini race in Mesquite this weekend, and I think this is more towards, like, younger kids and not old guys like me. Like, is there even a plus 45 class?
I mean, yeah.
I don't think there is.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, you can just go, and I need an athlete for my team to represent, and you're the only logical choice in all of this.
Wow. Fair, but I don't even have a hole shot device on, Troy.
You don't need one.
What the hell am I going to do without a hole shot device?
You'll be fine. It's like you said, why do you need hole shot devices? Why do you need all this stuff, all this new technology? Just start on dirt. You got the clutch and just like old school.
Fair. Unfortunately, the 39 other riders have hole shot devices.
I mean, you're a 4-time Manitoba champion.
Yeah, that's true. It's a good point. I missed the fifth by 2 points.
But you verb guys, we,
bunch of assholes that you are, been putting a lot of pressure on me to race. And I'm not gonna. I am gonna go out to Mesquite to this World Mini this weekend, and I'm gonna ride. I'm gonna ride blazing fast, of course, but I don't intend to race.
Super fast though. Like you'll be tripling stuff, you'll be just shredding.
And I told you guys, all of you people at Verb, that if I pull in this weekend,
yeah,
because I'm kind of going under protest, under duress, right? I told you, Verb guys, that you can pass this on, Troy, to, you know, whoever there at Verb,
the team.
That
if I
pull in, and there isn't free entry, a good parking spot, concession vouchers, an umbrella, I'm turning my truck around and going right home.
Okay, so last one. I'm writing. I'm taking notes. So last one.
Okay, please write all of that down.
You want a 10x10 or just an umbrella? Like what?
Just an like
10x20
sort of bigger umbrellas, like patio umbrellas.
Oh.
But I'll take an easy up.
10x20 or 10x10? What's good?
10x10, yeah. 10x10 is fine.
Okay. Noted. I might have to buy an extra one, but we'll make it happen. We'll get
so
the demand.
This is what it's going to take for me to show up this weekend.
What about, like, you know, free pizza or something?
Concession voucher, however you want to turn that into something.
Steak,
you know,
steak dinners.
Sure, I'll take that.
The reason, okay. I wanted you to race for me. I was going to pay for your entry fee, but you have no interest. And me, I'm not going to pressure you into something you don't want to do. So, if Wes is doing that to you, or Slaw, or Chase, like, that's not me. I'm your teammate.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
But I've seen how this movie plays out. You know, the coach, the mentor. You think of Million Dollar Baby with Clint Eastwood. You think of Rocky IV with Sylvester. You think of all of these movies. I've seen how this plays out. You, the coach, the boss, the manager, you know, enters your athlete, me, into one more race and one more fight or whatever. And then it goes terribly. Ask Apollo Creed. Ask the chick that hit her head on the stool in Million Dollar Baby. Like, Troy, you should know how this is going to go if you, you know, drag me out for one more race. And then my death, my injuries will be on your hands, Troy.
So for one, I understand. I get what you're putting down. I've never seen any of those movies, and I don't understand any of those references. So, like, for the listeners of the podcast network, might not either. So, I'm not sure what to do here, you know? But yeah. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. I don't even think, like I said, I think there's a plus 30 class, and that's it. So, I would also like to go on the record on this podcast and make it known that Verbmoto is age discrimination against older gentlemen like myself. Because I was told there's only a plus 30 class, and that's as high as it goes.
Well, you know.
Vet lives matter also, you know.
We also have a, you know, pro sport class I think you're fast enough for.
Zero chance that I'm fast enough for that, Troy. I'm a terrible dirt bike rider.
But there's $9,000 in pro purse that is up for grabs. So I feel like
is even, it really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty cool. And how do I get entered into winning all this Yamaha shit? How do I get into that? Am I eligible?
I think so. I don't know. I'd have to check. You do so much for everyone else. I feel like maybe you should be.
What kind of operation are we running over there?
What do you mean?
You should know this, Troy.
Well, like, I'm not available to win it. Like, I think that's a bunch of bull. But, like, you should be able to. But I don't know.
I feel like I should. Yeah. Right?
My vote is yes. If you want to enter, you got to buy some Verb merch.
Yeah, how does that work? What do I got to do?
Oh, you just got to go to shopverb.com and buy stuff. So, like, the more stuff you buy, every dollar you spend, that's an entry.
Okay, so I'm not buying anything. Mm-hmm. I want stuff for free, and I want to be entered into the draw. So pass that on.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to work.
Okay, well, we might have a problem.
Well, you know, you could buy one entry on the last day. You could buy, like, one shirt and get, like, 20 entries or so. And then on the last day, and that how your Yamaha drawing usually is, you have a really good chance of winning.
Okay, fair.
Okay.
Also, did you know, Troy, that Chase and Wes are coming in studio on Monday on the next show?
That's in my notes here. I'm very upset.
Why?
We
tried this with you. We had a lot of problems with you the last time.
We had a very... I thought we had a pretty good agreement here where if Wes came in studio or anybody in Verb came in studio, it would be me. What's the deal?
Well, I wasn't aware of this agreement, but, you know, you can certainly take this up with your people at the place where you work.
You know what they tell me when I say that? They say, sorry, man, we don't run Pulp Max. We don't know.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They put the blame on you.
Yeah. That sounds like corporate America.
Well, you know,
sounds like corporate America's ethos are running wild at Verb Moto.
It was a one-time thing. It was a kind of my fault.
It was your fault.
It was definitely my fault. I can't get around that. It would never happen again.
Okay.
So, yes, 3 years later, 2 years later, I'm sorry, and I need to.
Your shirt lives on in the studio. Just know that.
Yeah, I was going to ask that.
Your spirit is still here. Yeah.
Right next to Mark's?
Yep. Your spirit lives on, so.
You never even touched it. You just kept it there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's where it belongs. In memory of you, even though you're not dead.
So I'm in there for every show then. I'm good.
Yeah. Good point. I wonder if Wes is going to, like, tear it down. When he sees it on Monday,
it would probably be Chase to do that, and don't let him touch it. Don't let him wear it. Don't let him look at it.
Yeah.
Just no.
Fair.
Yeah. So that was in my notes here. I'm just kind of bummed out that I didn't receive the invite from my people or you. And I heard about this, you know, I had to find out it on my own and it hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to say that.
Well, you know what, Troy, life's not always, you know, Box Chocolates, to reference another old movie.
I know that one.
Okay, good.
I just feel like the plane incident is going to be following me and haunting me my whole life now.
I mean, as it should. Jeez. As it should. That was something else.
Hey, it never happened in history, and it hasn't happened since. So, you know, it's kind of.
Are you a better traveler? Are you a? You feel like you're a better traveler?
I think so. I haven't really traveled since. I mean, I went to Florida a couple times, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And also, my new role here at Verb, editor in chief. I'm going to be traveling a lot, so I'll prove it to you.
So you're Verb full time.
Yeah, full time as of January.
Look at you.
I know.
Look at you.
Do you
just like Mr. Side? You graduated and blossomed.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you, you know, me working for you like 10 years ago, are you taking full credit for this?
Well, considering I just found out that you're full-time Verb 20 seconds ago, yeah, let me work on that. I probably will. I just need to come up with the narrative.
No, it's good. I mean, it's it took me 15 years to get a full-time thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we're here, and we made it. So
nice. Yeah. Nice.
Yep. So I just figured you should. I thought I told you. You may have forgotten. You have a lot going on. So
yeah, maybe
missed the memo.
Mm-hmm.
Also, with all the things you have going on, Verb is going to live stream your. Let me get this right so I don't mess it up. The Pulpamex Yamaha LCQ Challenge this year once again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that is a thing. Verb, it will be on Verb Moto, and you guys at Verb may or may not have strong armed me into going to this race based on the streaming of the Yamaha LCQ Privateer Challenge race. So, kudos to you guys, like North Korea, you guys have used your power for bad.
Oh man. That, mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean that I was going to say that was my idea to like help you stream the race, but now we've just got tied into North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's Wes that did that.
Yep, I believe it is. But no, I'm super stoked to have you guys involved with it. It went off really well last year. Everybody did a great job, and like the race, people want to watch the race. Like it's the number one thing that I was getting asked when I was putting it on for the first time. And thanks to the guys at Feld for letting me do that. And then people were like, where can I watch it? And I'm like, I don't know. Just there's going to be a bunch of people in the stands on Instagram. So, you know, follow them. And thankfully the Verb guys stepped up and did a great job, because I think what they do really well is that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, it's awesome to have it available on Friday afternoon to be streamed for everybody to watch, and we're going to give away a bunch of money. And if you go to pulpmex.com, you can enter the raffle to win a YZ450F, because Yamaha's also awesome in donating that bike. And then we have like 19 other prizes, which is really cool. And then, yeah, all streamed on Verb Moto. So awesome to have.
I know we say this every year, but it's kind of like Anaheim 1 when you enter a new season. This field is the most stacked ever, but this field of privateers is probably the most stacked LCQ challenge you're going to have in its history so far.
Yeah, you know what's weird is, like, so last year Cartwright was crushing it and got into this race, and Moran's was crushing it so much that he wasn't even in this race because he was making all the main events, and Starling also. And now we have 1 year of a flip of the points. Well, Harlan too, but Harlan at least has a reason. He's coming off a pretty big injury. And then now, like, Moran's and Starling are in the points, but they're way down. Like, they'll be in this race. They barely made any mains. And yeah, it's really weird to see these privateers sort of like flip flop from riding really well to not riding well to main events to not main events. Like, yeah, I don't know, man. It's I don't really know why. I don't know what, you know, I don't know what changed with these guys, but the field of privateers from last year to this year, like you said, they're all great riders, but it's really flipped. So that's kind of neat to see.
I was kind of wondering that myself. Like, yeah, a couple of these guys haven't been what they've been in years past, and I wonder if you get to this part of the season, if it's just, hey, let's start thinking about the LCQ challenge instead and start racking up points for that. I don't know.
Yeah, I think there are some guys thinking about that. I really do, you know. I do think that there's some guys doing that.
Well, thanks to you, they now have a way to make money, more money, and it's a cool deal for everybody, and it's probably going to be one of the best races of the weekend. It usually is.
Yeah, it should be fun. We're going to do some stuff with the format and make it look a little different than we did last year, and looking forward to doing that and giving away a bunch of money.
One of these years, I want to come out and hold the 30-second board, but after what we saw, the monster girl getting hit by the board, I don't know, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it would be so you
to
get hit by the bikes, you know, I feel.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I kind of get that sort of stuff happened to me. So
Yeah, 100%, right?
We'll just chalk it up to rookie mistakes, maybe.
There we go.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know. I'm still upset that I'm not in studio this weekend. I'm probably just gonna call in and yell at you guys for it. But
okay. But
maybe not. Okay. We'll see. I might just be too upset. I might not even listen.
Wow. No, you listen. 100% you listen.
Yeah, there's 100% chance I listen.
Right. Yeah, let's not throw around things that we can't back up, Troy.
Yeah, I know. You got me on that.
Mm-hmm.
So, back to World Mini. You, as a kid in Canada, growing up, have you ever heard about World Mini when you were growing up, or is there anything?
Oh, yeah. Is it absolutely in Motocross Action magazine every year, right? It was in Vegas. It's funny, in talking to guys now that did it year in and year out, they were like, dude, it was always so windy, so dusty. It didn't sound like a fun race. It was out at the Vegas Speedway, right?
Mm-hmm.
It didn't sound like a real fun race, but it was certainly iconic amateur race, like Palco, like Loretta's, and all of that. And it's cool that it's back. And like I said earlier, Gary Bruff. Bruff? Yeah, Gary Bruff, I think.
Yeah, you're right.
He does a fantastic job with the Mesquite track. And I know you guys had some race there a few weeks ago as well. So you're familiar with Mesquite. So this is like the World Mini, but better, because I think the track and the facility is better than what we used to have.
Yeah, back then you used to watch, it was like a, you know, blue groove everywhere, wind was rough. It's just
I remember like photos in the cycle news or magazines, and just all the spectators had goggles off.
That makes sense. And yeah, you're right. Mesquite's nothing like that.
No.
So you're usually around a five for everything with excitement levels. Are you are you around a five, or are you above that?
Well, I don't know. We'll see. I'll let you know. I'm probably a five right now.
If your demands are met at the gate, where will you be at?
Seven.
We'll take it. Yeah, that's all.
Yep. All of the people at Verb need to know my demands. I'm going there, and I think Wes wants to do, we may or may not bring back the Bottom Line show as well. Something that Wes was involved with way back in the day. And we may bring that back this weekend. We have some ideas. And then I am just going to be riding, not racing, and enjoying myself. And I don't really care what anybody thinks. I'm going to do some laps and pretend that I'm out there by myself.
That's all that matters. You just go out and have fun. You look good on the bike of the year. And just look good. That's all you really need to do. Get some Insta bangers.
I would have to hope that the Verb crew could somehow make me look good in an Insta banger.
You're gonna have so many Insta bangers. They're filming literally everything, and then we'll throw you the clips. It's perfect.
Nice.
So, okay, the demands are, just so I have this clear, we have an easy up, 10x10. We have food, perhaps steak dinner. We have good parking.
Yep.
Is that it?
And free entry.
Okay, free entry.
Like free entry into the track. I need my transponder paid for, or if I need a transponder, I don't even know.
Mm.
Basically, I don't want to do anything. I want to be, you know, like when Jet shows up at the race on the weekend, his bike is there, his entry is paid, his food is there. I just want to be treated like that.
Like a factory athlete.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, and again, I'll stress this to you, Troy.
Mm-hmm.
I will turn the truck around and go straight home.
No, I believe it. You live like right next door to it. So it's not mm-hmm. far drive. Like I wouldn't put it past you. So.
Right.
Okay, I just sent out a Slack message to everybody, and you let me know if you have any issues. How about that?
Okay, yeah, please do. I'm going to put this on you.
Okay, that's fine. Everybody always does, so. You have fun this weekend, and thanks for coming on my pod. That was cool. I'll have you on my podcast since you won't have me on yours.
Oh, that's harsh. Well, I would have you on mine, but we don't think you can figure out a way to Vegas.
But I know how to use a phone, Steve.
True.
That's true.
Well, listen, I mean, we had Eli Tomac on Monday and Jet Lawrence and Chase Sexton the last few weeks. So, you know, I'll try to fit you in there, Troy.
I belong in there with those guys, you know. You know, it's I see all the love to Kellen, all the love to Lewis, all the love to Dark. Mm-hmm. I'm just feeling a little bit unloved right now.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll see how this weekend goes and we can reassess.
All right, boss. All right. I'm still calling you boss. Like, it's 10 years ago. I need to get over that.
Yeah, you need to get over that.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for your time. Appreciate it. Have fun.
Okay. Sounds good, Troy. Thanks for having me, man.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
See ya.
Sunday. Prepare to get annihilated with an awesome opportunity. Featuring your favorite motocross brand, Verb Moto. Win a grand prize of a Yamaha Wolverine R-Max 2 1000 Sport. 2 2024 Yamaha TTR 110E motorcycles. And $20,000 cash. But wait, there's more. There's also additional weekly prizes. New merch, pocket-breaking prizes, our pockets, definitely not your pockets. The more you buy, the more points you earn. We're stacking points, baby. Come get them. Visit shopverb.com for more or dial 1-800-VERB-MOTO. That's not a real number. Don't call us, please. No purchase necessary. Rules and regulations apply. See shopverb.com for official rules.
You know, I really thought Steve's demands were kind of mild. Like, knowing him, I thought he was going to have way more from me, like a better list. I had my list written out of what I could offer him, and I was just going to let him tell me what he needed. And that was pretty mild. So we're going to make that happen. You know, I'm not going to pressure my athlete into racing if he doesn't want to. I wouldn't want to do that either. So I respect the man for that. But man, we still got some beef. Like I'll just have him on my pod if I want to hear him, because everyone else gets the love, but T-Dog gets left behind sometimes just because I missed one plane flight in my life. Sad, really. But we'll heal and we'll move on. Thanks to Mr. Steve Mathis for coming on the show. My old boss at Pulp, back when I was just a wee little guy trying to make it in the sport. And now we're going to go over to Blake Wharton, see if his hair is doing all right, and get in touch with him about this magical week he had in 2007. All right, joining me today on the Squad Pod on the Vermoto Podcast Network is a man who has won 250 Supercross races. He's a former Geico Honda rider and a former Rockstar Energy Suzuki rider. He's a world mini legend. It's Blake Wharton. What's up, man?
How's it going?
Dude, catching up with you. It's been a while.
No, I know it's been a while. It sounds like you guys have a pretty interesting and awesome event coming up, and sounds like it went well last year. So I've got some good history there and some good stories for sure.
Yeah, and one year in particular, it's 2007, World Mini. You are a KTM amateur rider, right? And
that's correct, yeah.
That's like the second rendition of that team, right? Like, it was like Zach Osborne was the first of that
program. Yeah, Zach was early, you know, KTM and KTM diehard early on. And that was sort of before they got really the team side figured out, I want to say, because they supported like one or two guys like individually, but it wasn't like, you know, a Team Green or a Arm Army or like Orange Brigade or anything like that back then. And Zach helped develop the bike, you know, because back then they didn't even have a, you know, an 85. So Zach was the first gen, and then so we were kind of the first real organized, you know, KTM effort with multiple guys, I think it's fair to say. And you know, the year was going good. I actually, that round, and we may have talked about this last year, but I hadn't even, you know, rode a 450 to that time. at that point or anything. So I didn't even have a 450 bike. And, you know, we get to the race and like a day or two before, my dad's like, let's put you in the 450 class. And I'm like, all right, I guess let's do it. You know? So I was already pretty familiar with just doing multiple bikes, you know, and at this point it was probably at its height in terms of two stroke, four stroke, stock and mod, everything like that. So yeah, my first time on a 450 was actually the practice day of Vegas at Worldmini.
Okay. So you leading up to it, you're on this team. Your dad said, hey, let's just try it. Like, was there any other events after this that you had even ridden a 450 at until you went obviously on the big bike full time?
No, this was it. Like, this was my first time riding a 450, was the day before the race, basically. So Steph, our mechanic, you know, Steph LeBlanc, he's a legend. Shout out Steph. He, you know, we set up the suspension somehow. We got my brother's practice bike and we just went out there. And the bike then was a four-speed, and it was linkageless, which I always loved. I loved the four-speed, and I loved the linkageless also. I didn't have much experience on anything else at that time, but those were actually some good characteristics for me because the low RPM character, you know, of the four-speed. And, I really liked the bike, and, it, you know, instantly. Of course, it was a bigger bike than I was used to doing. We had to make some suspension changes, and the first moto, it's just kind of like, take it easy, feel it out. I got a fourth the first moto, and then just after that, it kind of clicked into gear, and, you know, I just started riding it like anything else. So it ended up working out. You know, I wouldn't advise that probably, but, you know, looking back, it was the right move. And then looking back now, I probably would have rode a 85 stock, you know, if I'd have thought that it would have been so, you know, epic in you know, for that racetrack's history, I guess you could say. But so a lot of good came of it. Yeah, that's where we got noticed by Geico Honda, and sort of the rest is history from that.
Yeah, and when we talk about World Mini, a lot of people bring this up. Obviously, it's a big event for your career, your amateur career, and man, if my research is correct, you did win 5 championships, ranging from Super Mini to 450. So,
correct, yeah.
I don't know if you remember it differently, but, you know, when you talk about it, the legend of Blake Wharton, it's like, oh, he won like 10 championships that week, and he rode like 50 class and 450 class, and, you know, but you had 5. So you had Super Mini, 316, 250 B stock, 450 stock intermediate. 125, 250 schoolboy, 316 non-pro. That's a big class name. And then 450 mod intermediate.
Yeah, there was another class that I was kind of, you know, could have won, and I ended up crashing. It was actually before the last day, and I hurt my thumb. That was the 125 two-stroke class. And that one I just got up, and I kind of just rode around because I didn't know if I had an injury or not. I mean, I had an injury for sure, but I didn't know to what extent. I ended up getting fourth in that one, but yeah, it was there was a lot of good guys, and I guess the feat in some ways is even more not so much about, you know, how much I may have won that weekend. It's more of just having no time on the 450 and, you know, the range and scope of bikes that I was able to ride and race, and just the differences on them. You know, I had to be like first gear off the start on the 450, and it was like, you know, second gear off the start on everything else. And you know, there's so many different little nuances that, you know, each of those bikes had. I think the I don't know how many gears the two strokes or the four, you know, two of these had at that time. But yeah, you start throwing the stock and mod stuff in there, and it really, you know, adds up. And I think the most impressive part was probably, and you could check this, but on the last day, I think I raced nearly half of the motos of the full last day. So I think I rode like 6 of 14 or 15 races. So it was like close to half, I want to say. And so, yeah, I was just on the track and then off the track and on the track and off the track. But that was always better for me. The more time I had on the track, the more acclimated I got, the better, you know, your body is, and you don't have to warm up or anything like that. So it worked, yeah, definitely was the right move. It was one of my dad's finer moments of taking a risk and, you know, it playing off. And I'd done well in Vegas, you know, before that too, and had some good years. And Vegas was a tough place. It's not an easy place to show up to. You're never going to show up to a place like that your first year and do well, or maybe even the second year. It's kind of like Loretta's. There's a learning curve to all of these different tracks, these different landscapes, you know, because a dude from, you know, Florida or Texas is not going to be used to that style and that terrain. And, you know, with the winds being 30 miles an hour and just how brutal that place was, where a guy from Cali may be more acclimated, or Arizona. But so definitely there was a learning curve. But, you know, at that point in my career, being later in my amateur racing career, you know, we pretty much had everything at that point figured out in terms of, you know, showing up to a track and being good right away.
Did you like those conditions?
No, I mean, Vegas was brutal. Like, Vegas was known as, like, just they ripped it super deep, had tons of water. It was rutted, and, like, it shouldn't really have had ruts because of the dirt in that part of the world. It doesn't get rutted. But because they tilled it so deep, it was brutal. And I remember earlier on in racing Vegas, you know, they'd race it at night because they had so many motos to try to do, and you got, like, 6,000 guys out on a track, and the wind's blowing 30 miles an hour. You know, so it's like everything hard. I mean, everything was hard about it. You know, it was always a super challenge. Like, you know, Mammoth can be a challenge to acclimate to in a Vegas. And all those places were challenging. I liked it, you know, if I was doing well and if things were clicking. It wasn't my favorite, I guess you could say. But it definitely, you know, I'd come to terms with it over, you know, how many years I was there.
Yeah, that's a good point. So we'll get on the class list, but just to reference you earlier, you said you did race a 125 two-stroke class. Was there – so it was six classes all in, or did you race more?
On the last day?
No, just like in general.
I raced seven classes.
Okay.
But on the last day, all my mains were like on the last day. Cause they started the mains like halfway on the second to last day, and that's when my 125 two-stroke one of the mains was, the final. And so I had most of my final races on the last day. So that's why there was like so many in a short amount of time.
Okay. What was the other class?
Seven classes.
Yeah.
It had to have been an open, probably, because it was a 250 stock and 250F stock and mod.
Oh, okay.
Open 450 stock and mod. I'm assuming, but yeah, like you said, there was a super mini. There was a 125. And then there was some 250 stuff. And then what were all the classes? Heck, I don't know. If there was a class where you had to be a certain height and a certain weight, you know, I would probably have been signed up for it. Or like if you're right-handed, you can race. So that I'd have been there too. If there was a class that I could have raced that was long hair, then I would have been signed up for it. He'd have signed me up for everything.
Well, it's kind of cool because I think we talked about this was your final super mini race, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Okay, so yeah, at Loretta's that year, you did B and
125, yeah, and the school B boy. Stock and 125 open schoolboy mod, yeah.
Okay, so yeah, I mean at that point you're outgrowing the super mini, and you just kind of it's kind of weird for somebody, I guess, to race super mini and then just jump up midway through the year. I mean, you don't really see that anymore.
Yeah, it's changed a little, and everyone's more of a specialist now. They don't really do the multiple class thing. Everyone's like on a 250 only when they go and they're turning pro, let alone a 125, you know, which most of the guys won't be on. So it's just changed, and there's more specialists, like I said. But riding all those bikes definitely helps your skill, and then it definitely helps you learn things that being a specialist you won't learn. You can't figure it out. So it definitely is advantageous. And like my brother rode a two-stroke for a long time. That was kind of his thing. And he, you know, when guys want 250F. So there's something to be learned there about, you know, riding different bikes and doing different things.
Yeah, that's pretty cool too. Like you said, you had to race that final day to finish the championships up, and four different bikes, right? Super mini, 125, 250, 450.
Yeah, and the 450 I had was just a stock prop. Yeah, it was just a stalker, right? So I was able to ride that at least in two or three classes, whatever it was, where the other bikes were stock and mod for sure. And then, you know, and then the super mini was totally built. So It was a lot. Yeah, it was a handful. I was definitely tired after that one, but you know, you're that age, you can make it happen.
Yeah. So if I go down this list and we talk about each class, would you remember who you raced?
Oh yeah, yeah. I could probably tell you who raced. I know the light and the super mini class. In the second corner, I don't know what kind of start I got, but I almost fell over. I think I got a good start, but I nearly fell over and hit a rock or missed a gear or something. And so I had to come back from like 10th or 12th or something. And that one was kind of a spectacular race because I was able to cut through the pack and, you know, essentially win. But Craig was in that one and he was riding well. And I want to say, you know, Tomac and Barsha and, you know, all those guys that would have been around at that time that were maybe on a 125 and maybe not. But I know in that class I had those guys. Let's see, who else did I have? I know I had Odell on a 125 and a 250. You know, LeMay was on a 450 for sure. I had... I know the guys, and I'm just trying to... Some of the names are slipping me a little bit, but... You got the list in front of you, I presume, where you got the ability to pull it up.
Dude, I actually don't. Like, I couldn't find any on this race. That's why I'm like, man, we got to talk about it before.
I knew it was Odell and it was Barsha mostly in the 125 two-stroke class.
The legend, Taryn Odell.
Yes, correct. And then it was in the 250F.
Yeah. It's cool if you don't. I'm just like, there's so many big heavy hitters through those days.
And it was LeMay mostly in the 450 class with some other guys. There was what's his name, he's slipping my mind, he was on the Suzuki, but we could go back and check it out. But yeah, definitely some heavy hitters in the 125, the 250, and the super mini for sure. I think Craig got second super mini. I think I passed him on the last second to last lap, but lots of good guys, you know, lots of talent in that era. And, you know, it was, it was one for the books. So
2007 was, you love that bike. You told me that was your favorite bike probably ever that you even raced throughout your life.
Yeah, like the Suzuki Super Mini and then like the KTMs in 07 were awesome. The 250F and of course the 125 was good. And, you know, it was kind of a different bike at that time, even still, because KTM wasn't fully modernized yet or like mainstream. So it still had some quirks that were, you know, that were different, that were unique to that bike. But I never raced another 250 after that point or 450. So it was kind of like, it was all I knew. But don't sleep on that linkage list. You know, that was, has some advantages for sure.
Yeah. And what's cool about it is, Like we said, Osborne helps develop the bike, but you guys, you and your brother, are basically like the first attempt at a, you know, Orange Brigade, I guess, team, as you would call it. That's before Orange Brigade, but the factory amateur team, it started with you guys.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they wanted to sell that KTM wanted to, from what I recall, you know, he was basically wanting KTM to have to put a, you know, horse in the race, you know, and to have guys that were not just one guy, but, you know, have four or five, six guys. So a miniature version of, you know, what Team Green was doing, an even smaller version, of course, what Suzuki was doing, you know, because Suzuki was on the, you know, 10 to 12, 14 guys range. Cowie had more. And then Yamaha had a smaller pool, but KTM tried to keep it small, consolidated. You know, they were a smaller company, but they wanted to throw a lot at it, make sure their guys had what they needed. And so it was a super successful effort, I would say. And even before, it was probably even premature for that time. And, you know, a lot of it was KTM being ready to make that push and sell pushing for it, you know, so and having guys that were willing to do it. At that time, a lot of people weren't willing to take a chance at KTM. That's just the cold, hard truth. You know, people didn't believe in the bike outside of a 65.
And we may have talked about this in the last podcast, but yeah, 06, you're coming off Suzuki's. What made you make the switch to KTM?
We always liked KTM. We always knew that there was potential there with that brand. When they went to race, they went to win. They were smaller, so they could pivot and move easier than like Honda could. There's less, maybe less protocols that you had to go through. We always liked the bike, you know, for whatever reason. We always wanted to do something that was a little different. You know, we ended up on Honda, but that wasn't like the main goal. That wasn't even really where we started. We started with, you know, we set out, you know, I guess Suzuki was considered the premier racing team for a long time in the amateurs. And then KTM kind of came in and tried to up the ante. And it may not have lasted for like a long time, but we went with KTM and intended to stay with KTM. You know, it just didn't work out. But we liked what they were able to do. You know, we liked the brand. We saw, you know, some opportunity there, some potential there that, you know, most people just couldn't see or weren't willing to take a risk on.
Okay. My point for this two questions is, do you remember your moto scores for these championships at all? Because I couldn't find that either.
Like, I think in Vegas, you had to win the last moto, and the previous motos didn't even count.
Oh, okay.
So I think everything was just for qualifying. I think Vegas was come one, come all in the final. I think, but now I'm maybe second guessing that because of my two stroke scores. But I, you know, some of those amateur races were like, you know, combined scoring, and some of them were like, you win the last race, you win it. I think Vegas was that way. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
How long were the motos?
Five, six laps. I think we're going to say six laps. Yeah.
I mean, man, if you're racing that many classes on that last day, you probably were smoked.
Yeah, you know, but I was so used to it, you know, because I would race more than that. I would do weekends where I'd race 12 times. So, you know, that really in itself, it was the amount of races that I did, which was seven. And because it was a long weekend, I could race seven. But I'd go to a one-day, two-day race, and I'd race five, six classes sometimes.
There's nobody doing that anymore, by the way.
No, and it has its advantages and it's had some disadvantages. You know, it's like, I wish I could have done that in the pro racing scene, like, because I would have been really, really good at it. But you couldn't do it. You weren't eligible or legal to do it. I'd showed up on a 450 and race 250 class two, at least in Supercross, if they let me. But they quit doing that before I turned pro. And then in outdoors, you just can't, you know, I mean, you can, but that would be like a totally different deal. But to be able to do that. So it's, guys went more specialist, and you kind of need that now to go in straight into Supercross or like Moto to be like as good as possible, but it does hurt you in other ways. So it's just kind of a trade-off. I just wish there was, you know, you could do more, something more like that, you know, in the pro scene. It just was never allowed.
And obviously you gained a lot of attention this week from doing this. Do you remember anything in particular that happened? Like, did you get like a lot of comments from people you're racing against? Just like, what was the vibe?
Not necessarily. You know, it's like social media wasn't as big, and I wasn't like doing a lot of that stuff at that point anyway. So like my dad probably did, and my mechanic probably did. And I've heard a lot since then, you know, so it's definitely stuck with people. But you know, racers at that time, no one really talked to their competition in that era. So you didn't really hear much. It was just a big moment celebration, you know, on KTM side and like, you know, a major success. But yeah, Geico came from that field. So it's like, that's the most notable feat to come from it. And even though we weren't really intending on going to Honda, that wasn't our goal, but that's what ended up happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And 2007 as a whole for you was a big deal. It was probably one of your biggest amateur years. You won so much. I think there's one, I don't even know. I saw some breakdown where it was like how many championships you had. And it was just like triple of the second place person. So I don't.
Yeah, no, 07 was my best year. And 06 and 07 were my best years. So they were, so there was a lot that was accomplished in those 2 years.
Yeah. It's just world mini, man. It's this will forever go down in history. I don't think people will stop talking about it. So I want to do just cover everything so that people, when they do want to learn about Blake Wharton, they'll come to listen to this podcast and then learn all about it. So that was the goal.
Yeah, man. There's, you know, there's a lot. Like we would go practice starts on the sidewalk before the race, like a couple hours before the race, like down the road. No one knew that either. But we'd just find like an overpass because the Vegas then was notoriously slick off the line. and it was like a horrible, horrible slick. And so you had to have your starts figured out there if it was going to be a 5-6 lap race. So we would, I mean, yeah, we spared no expense. You know, we took it serious for sure. So, and you know, Vegas was brutal. It was dusty and dry at the end of the day, and winds were blowing. You had to whip it into the wind sometimes, and it was a tough one to get figured out. It really was. It was a tough one to acclimate to. Plenty of times where you go there and you know, you didn't do what you wanted to do. It's just a brutal place. But, yeah. You know, ultimately, like I said, you figure it out. You know, it takes time. You figure it out. But, yeah, big moment for Steph LeBlanc, you know, the mechanic at that time, being able to manage all those bikes. And of course, they were great bikes. And, you know, KTM was supporting us heavily. So he had everything he needed to get the job done. But, you know, with me alone and then my brother in different classes at the time, he was probably at the starting gate more than I was. He was the only guy at the start more than me.
Wait, so he was your brother's mechanic too?
What's that?
He was your brother's mechanic as well?
Well, he was. I mean, we brought in a second guy for some of the big races, so we may have had a second guy, but he was definitely still heavily involved. You know, and he did a lot of the work for many years. He did all the work for many years. And then we would have help, you know, with Clark Maxwell or, you know, some of the other guys that would be involved that were really good too. But so he still had his, you know, his hands full also. And the trainer was, you know, the trainer was involved at that point too. So he was heavily involved. Chris Brennan, MMA fighter and trainer. His boy's now is a pro fighter. So yeah, we had a big crew before, you know, the big crews were maybe as common. And so, you know, that was our way of upping the ante and bringing a pro side to amateur racing, you know. And it was already around with Neil Sapps and Alessi to an extent, and with Stewart and stuff. Like there was pro programs that had already started in the amateur scene, but that was sort of our way of, you know, bringing something to the table and raising the bar even more.
That is a good point. Your mechanic was the real MVP of the event. Like, that's so many bikes.
Yeah, just a lot, you know. And mm-hmm. he had another guy that was helping out for sure involved. But and it just depended on the race. We didn't always have two mechanics. So, but still a ton of work. And he's up there in Canada now with Factory KTM Canada. So he's still with the Orange brand.
That's cool. That's cool to hear. So you said Geico approached you after this race?
Yeah, that was where we really landed on the map. You know, their amateur racing scene was picking up. It was still kind of early in its inception, but it was, you'd already had Grant and you already had early on, and then you had Kennard, you know, the year before. So it was in its amateur to pro, you know, scene where that was happening more. It really wasn't around at that point, you know. So KTM just didn't have the infrastructure in place to carry someone like us into the pros. You know, they had the amateur side. They were just getting the amateur side, but, you know, Honda had already had that for, you know, 10, 15 years probably. And Cowie and Suzuki, it's just that gap, bridging the gap, that wasn't being done. You know, PC wasn't doing it. Star wasn't doing it. Nobody was doing it there. It was just unheard of. So if you signed a guy out of the amateurs, it was pretty rare. So it was, they just weren't ready to make that leap. And Geico was, and they were, you know, changing the industry standard at that point for bringing amateur guys into the professional ranks.
Right. And at that point you had Kennard making the jump up and you saw that. Yeah. So that had to make you feel pretty good going to that team.
Yeah. They had everything. They had it all figured out, you know, maybe not on the bike side yet. Like, you know, maybe where like a PC was at that time, or maybe even on the amateur side, even to where KTM was, but they definitely had the team in place and they had the finances and they had sponsors and they had Honda support. So they had the infrastructure that was there, and that was, you know, hugely important.
Did you go into Loretta's that year with knowing what you were doing for the next year, or did you sign after Loretta's?
No, we didn't. I don't, it was a while before we did it. You know, we tried to stay with KTM as long as possible, so we didn't sign the contract right away. I don't know when it was officially signed technically, but we held out hopes for a KTM deal, and it just never really came to fruition. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. World Mini.
Yeah.
World Mini legend, Blake Wharton. This will never happen again, I don't think. You know, this racing that many different bikes in that many different classes just won't. So you can go to bed at night and just know that no one will ever top what you did there.
That it doesn't seem like it. It just seems like the standard has changed, you know. So it's one bike, two bikes, top specialist, and so it's not likely to happen. Like you said, it'd be cool to see something like that, or maybe some reason to incentivize guys to ride multiple bikes. You know, I think that would be cool. Other than learning some bike skills, you know, that was more like a 1970s, 1980s thing. And not that they had all those bikes to choose from at that time. It's just that those guys did more different disciplines. You know, the supercross specialist wasn't around yet because the sport was just so early on. You may have been a moto specialist, but the sport was still pretty new. So guys raced flat track and TT and motocross and desert. People did more things at that time. And everything's gone more specialist now. So you have to be really, really fast on a 250. It's one bike, and you may only be a supercross guy. So it's just narrowed down, you know.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Man, you need to come out and, I know it's obviously World Mini is happening right now, but we got a plus 30 class, and then our pro classes are $9,000 in purse. So,
I have to dust off the old linkage list 07 and come out there and see what it's like. Now, I've definitely been riding some and doing some more riding right now, and we got some exciting projects in the works with some different companies. So you'll definitely see me on a bike at some point.
I like hearing that, but I also like hearing the 07 idea. Maybe we just bring the old 07 out and see how you can run with the young guns.
No, don't let the year fool you. If it's got a motor and it's got two wheels and a throttle, I can ride it. So don't tempt me with a good time. But yeah, definitely, there's a lot of cool stuff that could be done with the, you know, carbureted bikes or the, you know, XR200s or the, or air cooled, or, you know, linkage less or something like that. There's a lot. You can definitely still go fast on them.
It's good to hear. And you told me the hair is intact. We're still good.
My hair is still, it's still there. I had to trim it back a little because it gets to be a handful, but no, it's still there. So it's alive and well. It's thriving.
It is.
It's Texas humidity.
It's always been alive.
It's alive. It's got a mind of its own.
Cool, man. Well, thanks for going down memory lane with me and talking about World Mini.
Awesome. No worries. I hope you guys have a good event. Yeah, definitely send me some of this content, and I'll do some sharing. And here's to Vegas and many O's.
All right, man. Well, thanks for your time. We'll talk to you soon.
Awesome. Thanks.
See ya. It's always good to catch up with Mr. Blake Wharton. Man, I think he's actually interested in doing some racing with us coming up for the Verb Shred Tours. He wants to talk more about it. So that could be something to really look forward to. Come out and rip with Blake Wharton at a shred tour. Count me in. So, man, this was a cool show. It was a good World Mini pump up. And there's bikes on the track right now as we speak for practice day. You know, yesterday was moving day. Today's practice day. And we're doing some qualifying action. And then tomorrow we start the racing and crown some winners. So yeah, keep it locked to verbmoto.com all week long. I'll provide lots of coverage. The boys are doing some podcasting at the event. They're doing pictures. They're doing videos. There's actually a pretty cool thing that Wes has started to do. He's filming everything and then he's uploading clips, and we'll have that link to you guys shortly. But all you have to do, if you want clips of yourself, just go to that, download them, and there you go. I've never seen anything like that. Shout out to Verb West for continuing to push the boundaries in moto. And that'll do it for me. Thanks to Steve Mathis. Thanks to Blake Wharton. Thanks to you guys for listening. Thanks to Bub Dog. Thanks to Duke Dog. Thanks to Ginger Dog. Thanks to Boots Dog. Thanks to CMXR Doggy. Thanks to the squad. See you guys next week.